Welcome in, everybody. I'm Dr. Tim Brown. This is Farmcast for the Community, sponsored by the University of Georgia's College of Pharmacy. As with every month, we try to choose a topic that fits in what's going on across the nation. But I want to remind everybody, before we get to November, in January, I have Dr. Randy Tackett coming on board to talk about alcohol use. You may say to yourself, self, why do I care about that? Well, between the pandemic, sitting at home, New Year's Eve, the holidays, being with your family for the first time in 2 years, I would imagine many of us are trying to say, are we drinking more than we did before the pandemic and things that are going on? Dr. Tackett's going to walk us through what those criteria look like for using too much alcohol. And if we are, what should we do about it? And more importantly, how does it impact our health and how do we stay healthy through all the things that are going on in our world? Which brings me to November. Many people may not realize this, but November has been renamed Movember. Movember talking about men's health. This particular month is really all about the man. And not to take away from any of the ladies listening, I think anybody listening right now can take away a lot of the tips we're going to say to help keep family members healthy. And if your family is anything like mine, I find that moms, sisters, wives, all take care of those around them. So sometimes they hear things that I don't hear and they force me to take a look at my health care and get back in the mix. So to help us with this discussion today, I have two incredible experts coming on board. I have Dr. Henry Young. Dr. Young is a department head and Kroger Associate Professor in Clinical Administrative Pharmacy Department here at the University of Georgia. He is a behavioral and social scientist with expertise in health services research. He also has a research interest dealing with medication use, healthy communication, health outcomes, as well as looking at minority and underserved populations and their health care. Welcome, Dr. Young.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
No worries. And then, of course, Dr. Ewan Cobrand is coming on board, assistant professor in the Clinical and Administrative Pharmacy Department here at University of Georgia as well. His area of expertise is cancer disparity and talking about men's health overall. These are two of my colleagues, guys, and I've asked them on board because their background in dealing with the health care across the continuum is amazing, but also they have a lot of discussion about how healthcare happens with men. Which, guys, let's face reality for a second. Men are not the best people in the world to seek out healthcare. And I'm being general here, but I feel like I sit in this population. Is that a true statement from what your research and what you guys see?
Absolutely.
Dr. Young, to your point, absolutely. I read a statistic that men live 5 years less than women. And on average, 12% of the male population age 18 years and older only have fair to poor health. 12%. Now you're like, oh, that doesn't sound like a lot. When you realize the number of people who live in America, 12%, that's a huge number of people that aren't living healthier lives that fall into that gender of man.
Yes. And oftentimes we just don't think about it. Or we just don't know. We often encounter, two of those barriers just so often. And sometimes, we need those nudges from, our loved ones to help activate us, to move us towards, doing some of the things that we need to do.
Dr. Cobrand, I know you specialize in men's health. To Dr. Young's point, isn't it also true, sometimes we just stick our head in the sand and go, that's it. I don't want to deal with this right now. I got so much going on. I want to make sure I took care of my family, make sure the kids are healthy, make sure my spouse is healthy. I'm fine. Yes, I have a migraine for the last 10 days, but I'm fine. We sometimes just don't think, is that a fair assessment that many times you see when you're dealing with folks?
You're absolutely right. And what Henry mentioned, I think for the most part, we will jam our hand as men, we will jam our hands in the car. The hand is bloody and we will drive to daycare and leave that hand, go to work, and we're taking care of responsibilities at work. And so for the most part, I think the big thing is as men, all of us, we don't take very good care of ourselves. We put others in front of us. And I think that's one of the big things that you'll see in the community, that we want to make sure that everyone is taken care of, especially if you're taking care of your family, your immediate family, and you're taking care of grandma, mom and dad, you're sandwiching that generation where you're providing care for your immediate family who lives in the home and their mom and granddad. And so absolutely, I think that that's a big, another big key part as well. Yeah.
And I think, you know, thinking about my dad, sometimes it's a sign of weakness if I have to go in for something, you know, and I think men sort of get that area of we shouldn't do that. But that's the reason November has been renamed Movember. Can we talk about what Movember means? Like what was the whole purpose? Because this is a national trend. This is not a Georgia thing. This is not a UGA thing. This is a national trend to rename November to Movember.
So actually, you know, I want to extend it because it's an international trend. You know, it started, you know, back in, I think, 2003, maybe. And this is what, you know, I found when I was researching the topic. That some gentlemen in Australia, you know, said, hey, let's focus on our mustaches. Let's bring the mustaches back. And then after that, you know, things just started to grow. You know, they realized that, they generated a lot of conversation around mustaches. And they said, oh, let's see if we can't leverage this and leverage it and address, you know, some pertinent issues in men's community, well, in the community. Prostate cancer being one. So from that, it just grew and expanded. It reached out and started touching mental health and welfare. And it's just grown. It's grown tremendously.
Yeah, you know, I think I worked in a group that had several male residents before I came to UGA. And in November, all the residents would grow their beards and mustaches, with the mustaches becoming cheesier and cheesier as the weeks went by. But your point is, you know, it sort of got started with facial hair growth to show support of the movement. And they jumped on top of that. And you mentioned prostate cancer, which I think for me as a man scares the heck out of me whenever you start talking about this. Because number one, the prostate is not something I talk about in polite company. And number two, certainly don't want to talk about prostate cancer because that just sounds like that's going to impact way more than I needed to.
Right.
So how, you know, in terms of Movember and talking about men's health, we should be screening for prostate cancer. As men, we should be seeking care. And one of the things we should be looking for is what everybody calls preventive health.
Yes.
Catching problems before they occur. So Dr. Coburn, can you tell me prostate cancer wise, when should a man go for his first screening or when should he be seeking help in looking at this?
So I think that regular screening for prostate cancer should ideally begin at age 50, right? For people who are at average risk. But what we're seeing in African-American men or men who are at higher risk for prostate cancer. So one of the things, if you're at average risk for prostate cancer, we would say age 50, 45 for individuals who are at high risk, and then 40 for individuals who are at higher risk for prostate cancer. And so how do you say, why would you say, how do you know if you're at higher risk, right? So if you had a family member that had prostate cancer, they say early prostate cancer, so maybe 65 or older, so family member or brother, then you're at higher risk for prostate cancer. And so I think, so one direct family member, as in brother or father, then that puts you at higher risk for prostate cancer. What I have seen across rural counties in Georgia is that we are seeing prostate cancer being diagnosed in families wherein it goes all the way back to grandfather. So grandfather, father, brother, and then the sons will also have prostate cancer. And so these men are at high risk for prostate cancer. And so as you're approaching, so don't think, oh, prostate cancer is an old man's disease. No. You need to start thinking about what are my risk factors? And family history of prostate cancer is a big predictor in when you should be seeking screening.
So what about, you mentioned African-American men. Is there a different incidence or does it happen at a higher rate in certain cultures or populations that maybe would make your light bulb go off a little earlier? For example, in African-American men, is it happening at a higher rate than white guys?
So that can be tricky, but nonetheless, I think what we are seeing higher rates of prostate cancer in African-American men. And for the most part, some of the reasons that we've seen in the research literature, it is more so genetics. People from there's a higher rate of prostate cancer incidence in men from the African diaspora. So we are seeing some of that as well. We are also
diaspora. Okay, now you just throwing out words. I'm going to ask you what the heck that means. Okay.
That's a good. So diaspora is men who are originally from the African continent. So African continent, and then on top of that, you have. So when I think of the African diaspora, I say African continent, the Caribbean. So men who are also from the Caribbean, men who are here in the U.S., but they also have heritage back to Africa or heritage back to the Caribbean. So don't ever think when researchers use these big words, don't ever think it's they're trying to ask them. Tim, I love the fact that you said, what the heck is diaspora? Because I think for the most part, it just basically means where you're from, where is your family from. So what's I could also say I can also say European diaspora, right? I can also say Latin diaspora. Where are your family origin? I think that's the better word to say. It depends on your family historical origin. I think that's the best way to put it.
And so when you're talking, and Dr. Young, jump in too, because I know you do a lot with health prevention, but so as a man, if I have a family history, someone in the past who's had been diagnosed with prostate cancer, I should be establishing care. So when I'm ready to be screened, I should have somebody who's going to do it. Because who does the screening, doctor? I mean, who do you go to as a man to get screened for prostate? Is it a special doctor? Is it a special area? Can anybody do it? Either of you guys jump in, tell me.
So I would go ahead.
No, Dr. Coburn, go ahead and answer about the prostate cancer, because I want to get wider than that. So
yes, so Tim, you mentioned an excellent point, getting established with a general or primary care provider. For the most part, these screenings that we're going to be talking about, and later on we're also going to be talking about vaccines, it's that relationship with that primary care provider, because they're the ones who are going to be doing the initial screening or recommend. Once you know there's an abnormal result, then they will recommend you out to specialists. So if you don't have that established relationship, and in most cases, it doesn't necessarily even have to be an established relationship. It is more so, you need to have somebody wherein if something goes awry, this is the person I go to, right? And so I think that's one of the big things, that having that relationship, I think, is key.
Right.
I was going to say, to your point, Dr. Coburn, and Dr. Young, I'm going to ask you in a second, but so many of my friends go to rapid response when they get sick because they've never chosen a person off their list on their insurance to actually go to. So when they need them, they don't know who to go to. So Your point about choosing ahead of time and kind of having that person set up makes sense. And Dr. Young, I cut you off. What were you going to say?
Establish that relationship. You know, oftentimes we go when, you know, something is wrong. You know, we talked about it is so much better to, you know, advance, do things in ahead of time in a preventative manner. Don't wait till something, you know, is broken. Totally broken. It's like your car, right? You take your car into the shop, the mechanic says, hey, you might want to address this issue with your transmission. But you say, no, you know, I'm gonna go ahead and leave it alone. A couple of months down the road, that transmission goes out. And that's $4,500 gone when it could have been an easier fix earlier on.
Got it.
That is something that we just need to take care of when we're taking care of ourselves. And in order to do that, we need to get out and find a primary care provider, a doctor, right? So a doctor that we go to on an annual basis to say, hey, doc, you know, I need you to run these blood tests. I need you to do all of your evaluations because I need to see how my body is running. And if there's something that's, you know, out of whack, we need to address it now before it gets later on down the road. You know, we're talking about prostate cancer and all of these screenings and things. We do these screenings so we detect them earlier. Because if we address the issue earlier, we get better things happening, better, you know, medical terms, we say better outcomes.
Yep.
We get better things happening if we catch them earlier than if we wait. You know, so often we look at some of these healthcare disparities. And when I talk about healthcare disparities, I'm talking about extreme differences between groups. You know, we say, you know, African-Americans have health or worse health or, you know, worse outcomes when it comes to certain cancers. Oftentimes it's, you know, sometimes we may be waiting too long to seek that help. And it is much, and Dr. Coburn, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's much better to catch prostate cancer when it's at an earlier stage than advanced disease. You know, we just get better results from the treatment. So the only way we can do that is we need to find that doctor. We need to establish those relationships with our primary care providers. Go in and have those candid conversations. Hey, look, doc, I'm not feeling well. I need you to, you know, check this out. Or, hey, look, doc, you know, it's that annual evaluation. You know, try to your birthday, you know, say, hey, I need to have this annual evaluation around my birthday.
That's a good point. Your birthday.
I made it this far. Let me make sure that I can make it to my next birthday. Or are there some things I need to address to progress?
You know what I always hear when I talk to people, like, oh, yeah, but when I go, all they want to do is do all these tests. And I'm like, yeah, because you waited to go for 5 years and you're trying to catch up on, it's like not getting your oil changed and then getting it changed 100,000 miles and wondering why. So with prostate cancer, I think the other thing it scares people about these screenings is, how do you screen for prostate cancer? Because I think a lot of guys go, oh, I've heard stories. But how do you start the process to screen for prostate cancer? And we'll talk about the other screenings in a second, but I really want to focus on this screening for prostate cancer because we're seeing such an increase in diagnoses of prostate cancer in men. And it's because, to your point, Dr. Young, they're not seeking care early on. They're ignoring some of the symptoms. So what do you do to sort of make sure you have a healthy prostate? What is done for that to occur?
Okay, so I'll start. So you can have a blood test. So a lot of times what we'll see is we'll see men afraid of a digital rectum exam, right?
What is that?
So a digital rectum exam is wherein it's the finger test. It's where the your provider, and we're using the term provider broadly here, right? Because the provider will insert a finger into the rectum to check for abnormal growth, right? And that's a digital rectum exam.
You can feel the prostate, right? I mean, either the prostate's part of the urinary, like the peeing part.
Yep.
We're going to the other part because you can feel the prostate through the wall, right? To see if it's normal and
absolutely
round and didn't have any nodules or anything on it.
Right. And so, but that's the thing that scares most men, right? That's the thing that most men are like, well, I'll go in for my annual, but I don't want to do that right now. I don't want to do the digital rectum exam right now because, you know, it's going to throw my whole day off, right? But then you can also have a PSA, you know, which is a prostate specific antigen test, right?
That's blood, right?
That's the blood test. And the blood test, essentially what it's looking for biomarkers. It's looking for biomarkers within the prostate for abnormal, abnormal cell growth. That's the best way for me to keep it simple.
Okay, and so, really? Now, if my dad heard that, he'd be like, what the heck does that mean? I'd be like, Daddy, it means they're looking to make sure your prostate is doing what it should. Yes. there's a number, right? Even that says this is normal versus if it's high, it's like, huh, we need to look at this a little bit further, right?
And what you do is when you're having these annual exams, you can monitor that number.
So you get multiple numbers over time.
You get multiple numbers over time. And if you notice a big spike in that number, we may need to investigate this a little bit more.
So now to your point though about that, how often is a PSA done? Like you talked about starting screening at 40 for those that are kind of very high risk, about 45 for those that are high risk, and 50 for the person that does not have a family member that's had prostate cancer, basically. How often should I get a PSA? Because let's face reality, I'm a little north of 50. So when should I get it done?
Okay. So if you're at 50 and you're at regular risk, I would say the recommendation is every 2 years for your PSA. But if you're at high risk, every year, every high risk or higher risk, every year you should be getting your PSA. And Tim, I want to share a quick story. My dad, recently, I think it was about a year ago, my dad has been going in, getting his African-American man north of 50. He's been going in getting his PSA test done every year. And so I think the last year he went in and there was a major spike. There was a major spike in his PSA, results. And my dad, you know, he's also from the Caribbean. And I was joking with Henry about this. He's also from the Caribbean. And so his dad said to him, not his dad, his doctor said to him, we need to monitor you because we don't like the number just elevated, spiked, right? His number between 1 year and the next year, the number elevated. So my dad and his friends, his colleagues, his friends, they hang out, they play dominoes at Friday nights, they have their thing. And so they have this secret juice that they all put together. They're this secret concoction of juice that they drink. And so the guys told my dad, you have to drink this juice every day. You got to drink this juice every day. You got to drink this juice every day. When he went back in, when my dad went back in 6 months later, his PSA came back down within range. And so he's been joking to everybody saying that, oh, this juice that we've been drinking, that's what caused my PSA. And Tim and Henry, this juice, it is disgusting. When I say the kind of things that they put in this, and it's bitter. It's these bitter elements, these bitter natural. But in their minds, it's that. But for the most part, I think, and these stories, these stories of these folktale juices and so on, you can see it throughout many different cultures. You don't just have to be African American. I'm sure that with Tim, within your culture, there's probably some juices that your dad and so on. And so I think that Henry and I, we'll joke about these things, but nonetheless, when it relates to men, we get together with our fellow men, and we'll come up with ideas and things to kind of target some of our issues. And so my dad's solution is that this juice brought his PSA. And I was like, nah, maybe there's some things that your doctor was doing at the same time.
Just maybe
there's some things that your doctor did as well.
Exactly. So we've talked about prostate screening every 2 years, maybe every year if you're higher risk. But, you know, we've talked about establishing that care. But there's another thing that men don't think about doing that I think, again, women are much better at this. And we've all heard the stories about mammograms and women doing self-exams for their breasts in the shower and kind of trying to catch breast cancer early, because the earlier you catch it, the better the outcome. For men, that translation probably is testicular cancer.
Yes.
And I don't think a lot of men realize that they should be doing their own self-evaluation or self-screening with testicular exams. And that right now, the guys are going, what does this mean? Well, I want to get into this because it's something that's easy to do, number one. Number two, it can be done in the shower. And then lastly, it doesn't have a copay associated with it. You don't have to leave the house. Well, I would hope you're not outside your house. You need to leave the house if you do this. But let's talk about self-examination for testicular. How often should men be checking to make sure that everything looks and feels smooth?
Well, you know, go ahead. You're about to say something.
I'll say should be starting at 15 and monthly. After shower, check monthly. Go ahead, Henry.
No, as a matter of fact, this is something that we can do. And I would say start early. Yeah. Because you have an opportunity to feel what your testicles are like. And you have an opportunity to say, okay, this feels, you know, smooth. Okay. But when you do it periodically and you notice something, you said, oh, okay, I might need to take note of that.
That's a good
and
point.
You feel that. Go ahead.
15 years of age, mm-hmm. sort of every month. And mm-hmm. to your point, Henry, is a good one because I'm not trying to be crass, but you kind of know what your body's like.
Absolutely.
And if something Absolutely. Happens, you're like, oh, that doesn't feel right.
It doesn't feel right.
Because mm-hmm. there's sometimes no pain associated with testicular. There's no nope. symptom necessarily until it gets noticeable. By looking, and that's go to way too far, right?
Way too far. Absolutely.
I think people think that if they get testicular cancer, they're going to feel it, like, you know, that sports injury where they got kicked. It's not that. It's kind of scary how quickly it can come about with no symptoms.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and there are a lot of other medical conditions like that, but, you know, particularly testicular cancer. It's something that you're going to need to watch and monitor and and you know, consistently, you know, do those examinations. And we say do it in the shower because, you know, that warm, that shower, that bath, that's when your scrotum, I want to be crass and say, you know, your balls. But that's, you know, that's generally where, you know, your scrotum is relaxed.
Yeah.
And you can get in there and feel.
Right. Well, you know, it's the same concept when you're talking about women doing self-breast exams. You know, they do it in the shower. Number one, it's your spot. Number two, it's warm water. And, you know, it's a little bit easier versus the cold, not air. Mm-hmm. And then I think the other thing that we don't talk about is, and I'm going to talk about skin cancer in a second, but if you have a significant other, someone in your life, this may sound horrible, but it's not wrong for someone to help you with a testicular exam because they actually recommend that someone catch it before you do. Because they may say, this doesn't feel like it did last month or last year.
That's
Yeah. So you can engage. Correct. Yeah. So I'm back to that point of anything to keep prevention and healthy. And if this makes you do it, having your significant other help you with this, then by all means, engage your significant other.
Absolutely.
Tim, I wanted to add a point real quickly here about testicular cancer. When I was looking at, you know, the discussion point for this, for our talk today, and just looking at the research, it's a cancer that impact young guys. It is. So whereas in a lot of people think prostate cancer, it's an old man's disease or elderly, testicular cancer, these are guys that are in their 30s, 50, you know, like, and so don't think that you're ever too young to be diagnosed with a cancer, because testicular cancer is something that are impacting our younger guys, you know. Right. Not to say that doesn't impact older guys as well, but it's something that you do need to be, we as men do need to be taking care of our body, get to understand our body. It's not a shame, you know, our bodies are not dirty. You know, those are some of the things that we need to be aware of. And so, yeah, absolutely.
I think that's a great point. And I think what Dr. Young was talking about is knowing your body, knowing what's going on. And I think that aspect of a man, sometimes the invincibility that nothing can go wrong when I'm 20 absolutely. Or I'm 30, that's not true. You know, while we're talking about this though, I think it's a good time to talk about, you know, sexual health. I mean, we're talking about testicular cancer, but can we touch a bit on men's sexual health? Like, what things should we be doing to stay as healthy as possible, but still enjoying our sex lives?
Definitely screening. You know,
what kind of screening, about, Dr. Young?
So I'm talking about HIV screening, for other sexually transmitted diseases, depending upon how active you are and your, you know, behavior, you know, what you do, right? It's just something that we just need to be cognizant and aware of,
and not be afraid to get it done. I think for anybody who's sexually active, you have to ask yourself, do you want to hurt your next partner or the person you're with? And, you know, infections can do that. And sometimes infections for ladies can actually result in infertility, and you don't want to be the person that did that. So yeah, that's a good point. HIV, a lot of people go, oh, that's a gay dude's disease, or that's this person, they shoot drugs I think the CDC recommends that everyone should be screened for HIV if they're sexually active, correct? I
mean, absolutely.
There's no who you sleep with, it's just that you sleep with somebody.
It touches everybody.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned STIs, and I think screening, there are a lot of places where you can just do an overall screening, but going back to that initial discussion about having that primary care person that you kind of trust and you go in every year, and having an honest, forthright discussion of, yep, I wasn't as careful as I could have been, or I wasn't as smart about my sexual health as until I listened to that podcast from University of Georgia. You know, Dr. Coburn said this, our bodies are not dirty. These are all steps to keep you healthy. I was reading an article about how men sometimes make decisions that we'll call stupid. And I can say that because I'm a man.
And, I made plenty of stupid.
Right.
Yes.
And so having screenings like this kind of help us know our status, know what's going on, and then quite frankly, seek help. Like if we need to get something taken care of or treated or managed, it's a big deal. The other side of this coin in discussing about cancers, and I've just gone through this recently, so I want to talk about it. If for those who haven't looked at the screen or know me, I'm about as pale as one can get. And so the sun and I don't always get along. But recently, I had a skin cancer scare. where I thought I had just a simple tear on my skin from working out. It ended up being a lesion that ended up having to be. How do we as men screen ourselves for skin cancer? Because I think everybody goes, oh, guys are outside working in the sun all the time. They have shirts. No, guys are out doing all the things anybody else is. We all have sun damage. Yep. And living in Georgia in particular, how do you not have sun damage?
Here's another opportunity. You know, I know some of us like to get into the gym and work out, and we like to see the results. Look in the mirror, right? Yep. It's the same thing. Look in that mirror. Do the evaluation and notice. Here's another thing where we need to start early.
Yep.
Because we can figure out and find things and then watch and monitor how they progress and how they may change over time. A hand mirror, because you can't look behind you. You know, you might have to situate yourself. You might have to sit down, you know, use that hand mirror to look at different parts of your body. Dr. Brown, you mentioned earlier your significant other. Mm-hmm. Have your significant other, your loved ones, look at you. You know, they might notice, hey, you know, I see this thing on your back that you might not have looked at. Hey, it's growing.
Yeah.
So, you know, take those opportunities to look at yourself.
Yeah.
And do those evaluations.
And I'll admit, I was in a bit of denial. I'm like, no, this cannot happen to me. I wear sunscreen all the time. I'm careful. You know, I try to eat relatively healthy. And you know what it boiled down to was, it's years of being outside with no shirt on at the beach. It's years of not thinking about it. Are the sunscreen wearing off? The other thing, and you point this out, Dr. Young, what should I be looking for? And a lot of times, if we do what we call skin mapping, where you see a freckle, it's been there since you were 10 years old, but all of a sudden when you're 40, that freckle looks like a mole.
Yep.
Then it's like, oh, I need to get that checked out. Or if you have a lesion on your skin that continues to bleed and won't heal, you need to check that out. And I think, Dr. Young, you summed this up really nicely. I can't see every part of my body. So it's nice to sort of know where everything is. But that primary care person we talked about earlier, you could also do what we call an annual skin check, and they will look you over in the office as well.
Yeah. So, yeah, I wanted to also, earlier you alluded to your paleness.
Well, yes. You know, yes.
Myself and Dr. Covering, we're a little dark, right?
Yes.
I want to highlight the importance for us to even protect our skin when we're out.
That's a good point.
In the sun. You know, oftentimes, you know, I might say, oh, I'm black. I don't need to put no sunscreen on. Yes, I do need to put some sunscreen on. You know, I can burn as easy as everybody else.
Yeah.
And we're
I think it's a misnomer that people that are darker don't react to the sun. I had a wonderful young lady on from a dermatologist's office in Atlanta, and she talked about how people, no matter their skin tone, get damaged from the sun every day.
Absolutely.
It does happen a little bit higher rate for those of us who are blonde and light-eyed. But
yes.
I think your point well taken that skin screening should happen for everybody. Doesn't really matter. You should be watching your skin at all times.
Absolutely.
I like that point.
Yeah. Dr. Brown, I want to add here. So Henry mentioned, yes, I'm dark skinned. I'm not even going to lie. And I, many, many years ago, I was in grad school. So a lot of times you think you're in grad school, you're in that professional program, you're busy, you don't have time. I would go into my annual visit and my general provider, he saw something on my toe that was just like, between the last year and the previous year, it had grown in size. And he was like, I don't like the way that look. And you're thinking, I don't need to put sunscreen on my toes. But you do. Need it. Like, I had no idea that I needed to put sunscreen on, because I grew up in Fort Lauderdale. I love going to the beach, take my shoes off, walk around on the beach. But years of going to the beach resulted in me having to get a mole removed because it was suspicious. And so they did a biopsy, came back. I was in grad school. It was 15 years ago in grad school. Never would have thought that I would have. Never would have thought, I want to get into too much, but never would have thought that black dude would have to get a mole removed off his toe because it's suspicious for skin cancer. So absolutely. Yeah.
Well, and you know, so I want to refer the audience back. If you look back in the earlier Farmcast, there's one that's on dermatology and we talk about sunscreens, but what Dr. Cobra just said, that this particular pharmacist walked us through how to apply sunscreen, where it should go, how often it should go, which type you should use. So instead of us spending time here today, spinning our wheels, go back to that Farmcast. But what we're saying to you guys out there is skin cancer happens to all of us. Yep,
absolutely.
So you need to have somebody looking at your skin, and don't wait to be like me north of 50 to all of a sudden go, huh, maybe I shouldn't have put that baby oil on and laid on the beach when I was, you know, 12 years old, 15 years old. Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. So I think I want to move beyond the screening when we talk about prostate cancer. We've talked about sexual health, testicular cancer. One of the areas, though, that I think most men do not do well with, beyond just seeking help and period, is mental health.
Oh, yes.
As much as I don't think we seek out and get preventive care for prostate cancer, our cholesterol, our blood pressure, it's even worse when it comes to us kind of hiding our feelings.
And it's real.
Yeah. Movember, this is one of the things about Movember. They really want to increase the awareness and about mental health and to say it's okay if you're struggling as a man with feelings and the way you're just getting through the day. Can we talk a little bit about how someone should know know they are in trouble? How should they know when they need to seek help? Because I'm not so sure all of us have enough self-awareness to call that out when it happens.
You know, and it's tough. Because oftentimes, you know, you're a man, you're struggling, you're just going through some things. But, you know, when it gets to a point where it's impacting your mood, your daily mood, your sleep, when it's impacting your interactions with folks, you're trying to withdraw and get away and just something's not right. Yeah. Those are all signs that, you know, we can say that, hey, you know, I may need to look into this. And Dr. Brown, you mentioned earlier, you know, us as men, you know, there might be that bad feelings or those bad thoughts about, hey, I'm mentally weak or my brain is weak. That we have to get away from that, right? Our brain and our mental health is just as important as the rest of our bodies and the rest of our health. So we got to take good care of our brains.
Dr. Brown and Dr. Young, one of the things that I want to say is that when it's persistent and say, for example, when moms give birth to babies, they call it the baby blues, right? They call it the blues. And a lot of time for us men, we can have the blues in a sense that not that we just gave birth to a child, no, but we can have the blues where it's persistent. It's just months on end where you don't feel like getting out of the bed. You don't feel like hanging out. You don't want to answer the phone. You know, the kids call or your friends will come by. You don't want to go to the group. You don't want to go hang out. And that's when you need to be encouraged. That's when you know you're in trouble. And so it's not that you're going to wake up tomorrow and all of a sudden you have suicidal, you will have suicidal thoughts. I was going to use a big word, but ideation. But
you know,
no.
I call you out, didn't
you?
You're
right. Right. So I was like, so as soon as it almost came out, I was like, thoughts, suicidal, you know, you're not going to wake up tomorrow and have the suicidal thoughts. It's going to be persistent. But not only that, but there is nothing wrong. There's no shame in having to take medication for mental health. That's the other thing. Don't feel as if, well, I need to take Prestique. I need to take all these other medication for mental health. Don't feel that you're any less of a man because you have to take. No. You want to be around for your loved ones, your spouse, your significant other. You know, take the medication. Take it because it will benefit you in the long run.
Or counseling.
I was thinking the same. Don't be shy to go talk about your feelings.
Absolutely. Yes.
I think I read an article a couple weeks ago, and I didn't realize I did this with my friends, but sometimes it's good just to have that person that you can just unload all your problems on for a minute. You don't really want them to give you advice.
No.
You just need somebody to hear you for 5 minutes, 10 minutes. And I have a group of friends, and I will tell you that they're programmed into my speaker in my car where I can just hit the button.
Yes.
To vent about something.
Yes.
Just the venting sometimes makes my mood elevate because I know I've got somebody who actually cares about me and said, your day has been horrible.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my gosh, thanks for recognizing that. I it doesn't even have to be formal. It could just be another guy listening to somebody else talk real quick and being like, you got this.
I'm glad you mentioned that because we have to be there for each other too. You know, we have to check on, you know, our friends, our other brothers, right?
Yeah.
we can notice, hey, something's not going on. And then you can have those conversations, you know, pull that your friend, that close friend aside and say, hey, you know, let's talk about this.
Right.
Good point. So lend an ear.
Yeah. I think we're also scared to admit that this new kid is bringing me down, or I'm having to get two jobs to afford this, or I'm so sick of being in the house with my loved ones with nowhere to go. I just want to get away for a minute.
Yeah.
that it's okay to seek out help and to talk to somebody who may be a professional, maybe a friend. Mm-hmm. But I think you guys said this earlier. I don't know if people realize or not, but I lost my partner to suicide about 6 or 7 years ago. And it was a long struggle. And so to Dr. Cobra's point about being persistent, there were months where everything was wonderful. And there were days where they just weren't. And so if you find that you cycle through and you're just sort of going through that process and you're not feeling happiness most of the time, it's time to seek help. It's time to talk about it. So you're not looking at this drastic measure of ending your life. And that's another part of Movember they talk about, is really trying to cut that off and let people know, seek help. There's no weakness. Matter of fact, I think you're strong as heck when you come out and you seek help and you talk about how you're feeling and what's going on. That takes a brave person to do that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And it takes a brave person because you're showing some vulnerability. Right. So often we have our guards up. We have to be this tough, right?
Yeah.
Tough person.
Right.
No, we have to just break that myth.
Yeah, I agree. You know, the one thing I just realized, we've talked about prostates, testicular health, sexual health, mental health. And you know how most men present with any one of those problems? Hey, doc, I can't seem to perform in the bedroom these days.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, yes.
Like any one of the things we've talked about, people don't come for those. They come because of that particular reason to the doc or to whomever, nurse practitioner, PA, pharmacist, and they go, can I get some medication?
Yes.
I don't think they realize that sexual performance or the ability to perform can be linked to all the things that we just talked about.
Absolutely. You know, I was just having a conversation with a buddy this past weekend. And he was saying, hey man, I got this going on. I just want to get it up and I can't, man, what should I do? And, you know, we had this conversation about, have you talked to your doctor?
Right.
I said, there's so many different things that could be related to that. It could be mental health. It could be cardiovascular.
Yes.
There could be low testosterone. It could be a different variety of things. That's why we have to go we have to bring it up.
Right.
And then B, we have to explore what's going on.
I think it's a symptom many times of something else that's wrong.
Absolutely.
And I know we're starting to treat it like it's an independent kind of issue. So we give, you know, one of the drugs, and giving one of those drugs may mask the other, right? If your LDL cholesterol is really high, it gums up your system and the blood can't get everywhere. Gums up is an old Southern phrase, guys. We tobacco farmers use, sorry. It clogs up, it clogs up all the blood, so the blood can't get to parts of the body. And just something as simple as lowering your cholesterol may help you achieve an erection.
Yep. Yes.
I think as men, we kind of focus on one area, and if that area is not working, oh my God, the rest of me is going to fall apart. When all of you might be falling apart, and that's the one area that's showing it right now.
That's showing it, right? you mentioned that. So cardiovascular disease, hypertension, a silent killer, right?
Yep.
You,
high blood pressure,
You can't feel it, right? The only way you'll know it is going and having those annual evaluations.
And diabetes, blood sugar.
Another one.
Thyroid. I mean, there's so much that men should be screened for. I mean, I know we focused a lot on cancer screening today and mental health, which, don't get me wrong, are incredibly important. And that's why Movember really kind of, that mustache grew into this full beard of us discussing this.
Yes.
But I think it's a great reminder that while you're there, look at all the other stuff too. And don't focus necessarily on just, I can't get an erection, which I would tell you, I said, I'm north of 50. I can't tell you how many friends I have, Jim, they text me and go, hey, dude, I know what you do for a living.
I need you to slip me a little something. Right.
We're not walking on this path because I'm not putting a band-aid on your wound. We need to see what's going on. I mean, I need to know like more history here. You know, what's your mood? How are you feeling? What's going on in your personal life? Mm-hmm. So I think for men, we have to realize that that it's not one area, that all the areas are connected together. Yes. So we're coming up here. I do want to do one last talk about screening because I think, again, we need to remind people, we talked about prostate cancer. The one we did not mix in this because it's universal across the board for both sexes is colon cancer.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so that sort of it doesn't really fit in Movember, but I feel like we still need to talk about it because they just changed the guidelines, right, Ewan? They just went to...
Yeah, so the guidelines for colon cancer screening is now age 45. It used to be 50, so now it's at age 45. And so a lot of, you know, Tim, you know, Dr. Brown, one of the things that we mentioned before we got on recording was that when the guidelines were a little bit at 50, people would think, well, I don't have to do that until I'm 50. You know, but now at 45, I think that's middle age. You need to be able to have these screenings.
That hurt. That really hurts. Past middle age. I felt that one. So, you know, it's funny you said, because earlier we talked about the digital rectal exam, you know, the finger, and everybody's like, okay, dude, I'm afraid of the finger. Yes. I am not about to get this colonoscopy done.
So let me tell you, can I jump in on that?
Yeah.
Because I had another conversation, and this was a conversation maybe about 6 months ago. And, you know, I was sharing a personal story. And so I had to have that done because I had some stuff going on and they thought I had Crohn's disease. They wanted to go check. Mm-hmm. I don't. But something happened. So I had to go through the procedure and I was sharing this, you know, with, you know, a friend of mine and he's an older gentleman and he looked at me and said, man, I'm scared of that. And I said, you don't need to be. I said, hey, cause they put me to sleep.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. It happened. I woke up. I didn't even know what happened. You know, I didn't feel violated. And it was fine.
Yeah.
And just having that conversation, cause I explained to him, hey, what I went to the Went to the it's an outpatient procedure. I went in, I talked, they put me to sleep, they did what they needed to do. You know, I woke up, I was a little groggy. You know, my significant other, my wife, she just said, you know, you were a little loopy. But I, you know, I didn't feel it. I didn't even remember it happened.
We've gotten so good in the healthcare system. I think this is the one screening test that we've gotten really great at because we know that, all cancers in general, but I think this one in particular, they've tried to make it as appealing as they possibly can because that's face reality. It's not a picnic. It's not something you wake up and go, huh, let's just get that every Friday. That's not something you do. But your point about they really do sedate you, take you pretty much out, and then they give you your screening to let you know if everything looks healthy. But if something doesn't look quite right, they set you up to come back for screenings over and over again, because if colon cancer is caught early on, it's my impression that the survival rate is really quite good.
Much better. Yep. Yes. Much better.
I think while we're talking about this area, I also want to reiterate, you know, anal cancer, colon cancer is much further up. Anal cancer is near the end and they can also look for things in that area as well. And There has been an increased instance of anal cancer, and particularly they talk about it with gay guys a lot. So, you know, if you're a gay dude listening to this, just keep in mind the colonoscopy do a lot more than just look for colon cancer. But I think anal cancer across the board, if you guys remember, Farrah Fawcett passed away from anal cancer. HPV, which is a virus, and we didn't even talk about vaccines, guys.
Yeah,
but so I'm having you guys back on. We're going to come back and talk about men's health in June. We're going to come back and talk
about
vaccines and all that.
Love
there's
it.
A vaccine against this virus that can cause penile cancer, cervical cancer for women, anal cancer for folks in general. And there's a vaccine out there that pharmacists play a significant role in when it comes to administration. But we're going to talk about that at a different time, because my guess would be that if we get into that, these poor people listening in their car right now need to be driving on a 4-hour trip to get us off. So we've covered Movember, prostate cancer, testicular, skin, colon. We've talked about other screenings for mental health, and we just sort of talked a little bit about erectile dysfunction and how that plays a role in a lot of what we've talked about today. So if my bad tune, go ahead, Dr. Young.
I said we did a lot.
I know, right? Well, we overachievers. Yes. But you know, I always use this as my premise on this podcast is, if my dad tunes in, what things would I want repeated for him so he can walk away and go, okay, those guys said I must do this as a guy. So I'm going to ask each of you to give me three pearls from our conversation today that if somebody tuned in the last 3 minutes of our conversation, they would walk away with a good understanding of what we have talked about in regards to men's health. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
All right.
And I'm going to start broad, right? Yeah. Establish a relationship with a doctor. Find a doctor. Go and have annual visits every year around your birthday, or pick a good date. Say, hey, I'm going to the doctor to get checked up. I got to see what's going on with myself. And then B, become an active participant in your healthcare. Mm-hmm. Ask those questions. Look at yourself. Do those self-examinations. Be an active part of your healthcare to take care of yourself. Those are my 3 points.
Those are good. Yeah. Dr. Coburn, the bar has been set really high.
Dr. Young, Dr. Young, Dr. Brown, you excellent, excellent. I would say don't be afraid of any of the screenings that you need to have. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid in terms of mentally. Don't be afraid and don't be ashamed. I think that's the big thing. Shame and afraid will kill you. And that's the big thing. We don't want too many men are dying because they're afraid of a test. They're dying because they're afraid or they're ashamed to take mental health or to take medication or get counseling. So definitely don't be afraid and don't be ashamed. I think that's one. Number two, You got to know your body. You got to take care of yourself and know your body. Take care of yourself, know your body. And then at the same time, my third point is more so don't be afraid to seek help. Don't be afraid. I know these are very simplistic, but we have to, when we're talking about our health, we have to make the complex simple. So don't be afraid to seek professional help. Establish that relationship with that provider and don't be afraid to ask questions. Doc, I don't feel well. I need to come in. And like, never too busy.
You know, from the six things you guys said, Ewan, yours it really sticks with me. Afraid and ashamed kills guys.
Yes.
Man,
yes.
If you had to sum up everything we talked about over this podcast, that statement hits to the core, I think, to many of us every day of, I'm ashamed that I don't feel good, or I'm ashamed that I didn't do what I was supposed to do and I didn't keep my blood pressure down, or I'm afraid they're going to do this test that hurts me and I don't want to go. Man, afraid and ashamed kills guys. That yes. should be a bumper sticker.
Yep.
Yeah, somewhere, somehow. Yeah. I want to thank you guys, Dr. Young, Dr. Coburn. You guys have really, really done a nice job with Movember. As a reminder for those, though, June is also another Men's Health Month. So I think, I'm not speaking too out of hand here, I'll be having these gentlemen back somewhere in June, and we'll talk about screenings for blood pressure, diabetes, cholesterol. We'll even talk a little bit more about erectile dysfunction and how we can look at that and manage with regard to medications. When should we use them? When shouldn't we use them? And what's the downside to their use? Until we get to that, though, I want to remind you, in January, once again, I have Dr. Randy Tackett coming on board, also from the University of Georgia's College of Pharmacy. He's going to talk about alcohol use. And as I mentioned at the top of this particular podcast, we're going to talk about, are we drinking too much? You know, has the pandemic, has living in our homes with everybody we know, or is it just in general, are we seeing much more of an acceptance to drink them more than we did when even we were in our 20s or 30s? And I'm using that because I see a lot of people asking the questions of, am I drinking too much? So join us in January for Dr. Randy Tackett to talk about alcohol use and also how to keep us healthy once again. Until then, thanks so much for listening to Farmcast for the Community. My name is Dr. Tim Brown. University of Georgia's College of Pharmacy sponsors this podcast, and we're very grateful for that. So until I see you guys again, please go in good health. Thank you so much.
Thank you.